I've worked with a lot of musicians over the years. David Bowie, now RIP. U2, worked, I think, on 7 albums with them.
From the BBC World Service, this is The Documentary. I'm Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent, and we're in the studio exploring the creative processes of one of the most important artists of the last 50 years, Brian Eno.
Coldplay, a couple of albums. John Hassell, I made 4 albums with him. Laurie Anderson, I've worked with. James, who else? Lots of people.
Composer, music producer, visual artist, theorist, activist, Brian Eno has strutted the stage with 70s glam rock band Roxy Music, resplendent in gold lamé, and has since collaborated with everyone from David Byrne of Talking Heads to Robert Fripp and Paul Simon. He also pioneered ambient music. His groundbreaking ambient album, Another Green World, has just turned 50.
Like many art students, I left college and joined a band. Unusual sort of person to be in a band because I didn't really play any instruments. I used electronics and made soundscapes, if you like. I thought of myself as a kind of sonic painter, really. At the same time, I didn't give up my visual art. So that's my parallel career. The third thing is I work as a producer. That means I help other people make their records. And I guess the fourth thing now, more and more, is that I'm an activist. I am actively involved in trying to work on social change.
We're in Brian's studio, an airy, loft-like muse house in West London. There are shelves spilling with books, a couple of sofas, and 2 of Eno's light boxes hang on the whitewashed brick walls. In a small room off the main space, 2 screens sit on a standing desk framed by a pair of stylish wooden speakers.
This is where I write. I work in here mostly, yes, in this room.
We stand beside his desk and Brian brings up an archive of tracks on one of the screens.
I can start by showing you something that is quite an interesting invention. So I have loads of unreleased pieces of music. Let me see how many there are. It has 9,798 tracks in it, which is the sum total of all the little bits and pieces I've made over the last 30 years or so. And some of them are very, very simple, single sounds almost, and some of them are finished pieces, and then nearly everything else is in between those two extremes. But what I wanted to show you was not only that archive, I also thought, wouldn't it be interesting if I could play randomly more than one piece at a time so that I could collage together 3 or 5 or 7 pieces. So we made this piece of software. So when I click this now, it's going to put together 3 pieces. So it'll make a combination I've never heard before. So that's a new piece of music. Yeah, so if I get something I like, I'm not particularly keen on this one. This sounds pretty good. So then I can go save combination, and it will save that as a piece of music. Let's say I adjust that a little bit.
I mean, that sounds like a finished piece of music. That does
by
not
Brian
sound
Eno.
Like three. It doesn't sound like 3 randomly selected tracks mixing together.
No.
That's amazing.
Sometimes you get finished pieces. I immediately get a picture from that of a nighttime landscape.
You said you get a picture of it. Whenever you're making a track, does it present itself visually as well?
Quite often, especially with this kind of landscapey music, I get a feeling of a kind of temperature, a type of light.
So with this piece of music, what picture are you getting? What temperature, what type of light?
Evening, a flat landscape, like a plane or some kind, something like that. I don't mean an aeroplane, I mean a plane. And some sort of insect or creature life, like that. Can you hear that sound? That sounds like something's alive there. I don't know what that is. With rhythmic music, I feel action more. I feel my own body in motion. I guess it's probably called dancing. But with this kind of music, I find it very visual. I mean, this is intensely visual to me, especially with this pulse that's coming there. That one. As soon as I start getting pictures, I know I'm getting somewhere.
And at the point where you start getting pictures, is it visceral as well? Do you have a particular feeling on your body at that point?
I feel that I know the climate of where I am. It's humid or it's dry or something like that. I don't wait for that to happen. I just keep working. And sooner or later, it does happen. As Picasso once said, inspiration happens, but it has to find you working.
You've said at various points that the process for you is more important than the outcome.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in making things by boring processes. So quite often, the way I start on something is by designing the process. So thinking of what would be a kind of interesting procedure and then going ahead and making it, and then waiting to see if anything like this happens. I'm just going to make sure I've saved this one. I don't know if I did. So if I shuffle it again, last time, just get those birds a little bit lower. I'll show you something else, because I'll just end up going to work if I don't. So there are lots of new kinds of instruments now in the world of music, and I'm going to show you a couple of them.
And what software are you using here?
It's a piece of software called Logic, which a lot of musicians use. And Logic can contain lots of other software, if you like, software instruments, one of which I'm about to show you, one of the more unusual ones. This is called Synplant, and it's a sort of evolving piece of software. Okay, so this is a kind of a random program from Synplant. Now, the nice thing about this is that I can tell it to evolve a little bit. But if I want to fine-tune it, I can find all of the different parameters that make up that sound and alter them. This is like being able to change the DNA of the sound.
As we talk, Brian starts selecting tracks and samples, which appear like a DNA helix on the monitor.
That's how those sounds are made. They're made by a particular piece of software. And I have lots of other ones as well, lots of other softwares, some of which are very simple, like this one here is just a two oscillator. So not only do I design processors, but I design sounds as well. So that's a sound I've never made before, for example. And may never make again. So I've made a sound. Now let me make a world that sound is going to exist in. And in this case, I'm going to make a large forest. Does any of this make any sense?
It's fascinating to be standing beside Eno, to be getting a glimpse of how he works. A slender elfin figure. He's dressed in a turquoise shirt and a navy corduroy jacket.
I'm so happy when I'm sitting in this room working on something, and I go into a different kind of state. I go into flow state where I'm sort of not thinking in a certain way. I'm just responding to feelings and trying to locate them and increase them and modulate them, you know. And a lot of the time, I think there's nothing going on in my mind. And that's such a luxury. You see, on average, I think now between 3,000 and 10,000 ads in a day. There's a battle going on for your attention. It's the most valuable thing about you from a corporate point of view. One of the duties of art is to say, relax your attention for a little bit. Let something happen to you. Just flow for a while. I spent a lot of time walking as a kid, and just letting yourself notice things and dreaming really. I think I was dreaming a lot of the time. I'd go and sit and do drawings on my little sketch pad. And I noticed then that if you sit still for 5 minutes, things stop noticing you. Everything goes back to its normal life, and suddenly there are little grass snakes wriggling by you and birds sitting quite close to you. And that was a kind of lesson to me, that if you shut up, the rest of the world speaks.
And this is how the artist Brian Eno thinks. In order to listen, you need to reduce the noise around you and let the world reveal itself. Then you can start to create.
I think when you're an artist, what you're doing is experimenting with making other worlds. So you're creating a kind of world, and it can be a great big world, like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, or it can be a tiny little world, like an earring. But what you're doing is saying, how do you feel about these values? Artists are basically feelings merchants. They're ways of making you have feelings. And that seems at first sight a little bit trivial, but actually feelings are our first responses to things. And we really make most of our difficult and important decisions on the basis of our feelings. Things like, what am I going to do with my life? Who do I want to be with? Who do I want to vote for? Those things are not generally rational decisions. They're decisions made on the basis of feelings. And I think feelings are the beginning of thinking. Feelings happen before thinking happens, and thinking happens before action happens. So feelings are at the root of things, and I think that's the material that artists work in.
In recent years, Eno's feelings about nature and the state of the environment have become central to his artistic output.
So, you know, here I am, an ordinary guy. I read New Scientist every week, and I read the papers, and I notice that hardly any of our politicians are talking about the most important problem. The most important problem isn't a few immigrants coming into the country on boats. The most important problem isn't China developing AI. The most important problem is that the ship is sinking, and it's happening quite fast. And a lot of my friends and people I knew were also concerned about this issue. You know, what can we do about it? Those people in government aren't doing anything about it. How can the rest of us do anything? Well, we have to somehow take it into our own hands.
And that is exactly what Brian Eno has done. While he used to be sceptical about celebrities becoming involved in politics or activism, in recent decades, social and environmental activism have become the cornerstone of his work. In 2021, he launched Earth Percent, an organisation which aims to unleash the power of music in service of the planet and raise $100 million for climate causes by 2030.
I've been working with Brian Eno and his environmental charity Earth Percent since the fall of 2022.
Donna Grantis is one of the world's greatest electric guitarists, best known for performing and recording with Prince and Third Eye Girl. Her current project is called Culture versus Policy and combines music with climate activism.
Earth Percent is the music industry's climate foundation, a framework that allows artists, record labels, and publishers the opportunity to help fund the climate emergency by funding organizations and climate justice foundations. Nina Simone famously said an artist's duty is to reflect the times, you know, and it's a very exciting time right now in that I feel like the movement is growing and more artists are coming together in collaboration with activists and scientists to really create that cultural change that's needed. Musicians are on stage in front of hundreds and thousands of people with microphones, you know, so we can spread the message and speak up and speak out about these issues. And I think that that's really important.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service I'm Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent, and I'm in the studio with music legend Brian Eno.
We had this idea of tapping into the very many income streams that there are in music and saying to people, would you give us a 1% of that? Would you give us 1% of your tour income? Would you give us 1% of an album income? So we want to sort of insert a little tap into that huge flow and siphon some off and put it into these good people who are doing great work all over the world, people working in the rainforests of Papua New Guinea, local people who look after the forest. It's where they live. Those are the people you should be giving money to. They know how it works there, and they have every reason to want to save it. So we want Earth Percent to be a place that sort of sucks in a little bit of all this vast amount of money that goes through the music business and feeds it back out to these people who are, in fact, the people protecting our future. It's a very simple idea, and it's starting to work, I'm pleased to say.
It's very exciting for me as an artist to be aligned with Earth Percent.
Donna Grantis is one of the artists raising funds for Earth Percent by crediting Earth as a co-writer of her music, with a portion of her royalties going to climate action groups, including Client Earth, Oceans and Us, and the Youth Justice Climate Fund.
It feels good to contribute and to know that music that I'm writing and recording can now, thanks to Earth Percent, co-credit the Earth as a writer, which is poetic and beautiful and an acknowledgement of the Earth.
Earlier this year, Earth Percent helped launch a pioneering initiative called Sounds Right, where nature can be credited as an artist and thereby earn royalties. That money is then spent on climate and biodiversity projects. British rapper and producer Louis VI is one of the artists taking part in this. I went to meet him at his London studio as he recorded a new track for Sounds Right.
You've got to find a rhythm within this, and you probably heard at the beginning a quite significant bird stand out, and I think that's what I looped. Like, what a rhythm. Nature has all the funk and all the rhythms. Like, the nightingales, birds, whales, insects have been singing for far longer than humans, man, and they've had all the time to come up with the waviest rhythms, so we're just copying them. What's amazing is now I can create a track using nature sounds and directly, as an artist, be empowered to do something with that music that contributes to trying to fix the planet and start to be a steward with art directly, which is kind of sick.
Like Brian, Louis firmly believes in the power of music to bring about positive change.
Where words have failed, where facts and science haven't quite triggered the emotion in people enough to make them or compel them to do something, art has this phenomenal way of cutting through.
Back in Brian's London studio, I ask him more about how he works.
I work like a painter, you know, I mix up colours, put them on the sonic canvas, try and mix another one to go with it, scrape a bit off of the first one. I'm doing that kind of process. It's very empirical rather than performing something. So it takes me a while to make something happen. It doesn't happen instantly, like when you're playing a song with a band.
I love that metaphor. Process of working. So if you're working on an album, like your own studio album,
yeah,
do you say, right, I'm going to go into the studio and work from 9 till 5 every day and treat it like a job? Or do you just do it when the inspiration takes you?
I feel a little bit like an athlete. So I think I have to do it quite a lot of the time to stay in shape, sort of thing. You know, athletes don't just practice on the day they're doing the race. They do it every day. If you're in shape, like you're working a lot, you're very, very alert to things. If you aren't, you're sort of sluggish and it's starting to push a big rock up a hill, right from the bottom of the hill. So I work as often as I can in here, but I'll fiddle around with something like this little synthesizer and see, I wonder what happens if I put the operator at a at a funny number like that, you know? What did that do? As you can hear, it makes a pretty awful sound.
While Eno often works alone, he remains one of the world's most sought-after music producers. A recent artist he's collaborated with is Norwegian singer-songwriter Aurora, who, like Louis, Donna and Brian, uses her art to advocate for environmental issues. I asked her what it's like to work with the great Brian Eno.
Oh, it was absolutely divine. I've only met Brian for like the last few years, but he's grown into some kind of soul friend. And he has this beautiful presence when he's in the room. He is so gentle and he listens and he kind of... It makes you think, which I really enjoy, people who makes you think, which is a rare thing these days.
It seems the feeling is mutual.
She's always noticing the curiosity of her own thoughts and acting on them and trusting them. And what I like about both Louis and Aurora is that you get the feeling of that they've been thinking. All this time they've been processing what they're getting in and they've been working out and thinking about it.
He has all this profound wisdom and beauty and also childish curiosity in the way he works and sees things, which goes very well in hand with the way I work, because I'm the same. So to work with him, to be in the presence of any like divine, wise creature who is also jumping around and laughing with the playfulness of a child is and will always be like the best thing to ever experience on earth.
Back with Brian Eno.
I have little rules, like one rule is no multiplication, because a lot of the things in a studio are to do with multiplying sound, like echo. That's a multiplication, or reverb, a multiplication, overdubbing, multi-tracking, all those sorts of things. You might say, I'm going to do something where I only use this simple instrument and I'm going to allow myself 30 minutes and see where I get to. And I always respond well to that kind of thing. It sort of focuses me and it makes me a little bit desperate because I think I've only got 15 minutes left and I haven't got anywhere yet. I better get going. And I do that with musicians as well, you know, just saying you can only play 4 sounds in this song and you have to do all the rhythm on your non-rhythmic instrument, like your microphone, for example. Just ways of pushing oneself out of the comfortable experience of sitting in a chair in front of a computer, which is actually the death of music if you're not careful. That's why I don't have very comfortable chairs either. You make completely different music if you stand up. If you're making rhythmic music, when you're standing, you do a lot of the rhythm with your body, so you don't have to put so much into the music. If you're sitting down and you want the music to do everything and you don't want yourself to do anything, then you fill it with beats, you fill it with stuff. And in fact, you don't need it to be that full. But you don't realize that till you stand up, that you can get away with very little information in the rhythm. I mean, hip-hop artists have realized that now. Rhythms have got so skeletal.
Is there anything you're working on at the moment?
This is a piece that I made for something I was doing in Manchester last week. So this was made to be talked over for a few minutes, you know, 20 minutes or so. So it has different threads in it, and they gradually emerge. So it's not a sort of sit and listen to piece of music. It's got a job to do, which is to support a voice.
So what is the secret behind Brian Eno's prolific, enduring success? I ask Aurora.
I think what makes Brian Eno, like the artist and musician and writer and kind of a creator and inventor that he is that he never gets tired of the wonders of life. And he never fails to be amazed by a sound, even though he's heard it before. So he has this genuine love for, I guess, life and the world and everything it has to offer you.
And what does Eno himself credit his success to?
I think what's the most important factor in every artist's success, actually, is a kind of a level of obsession, of just refusing to let something go and just thinking, I really want to do this. That's the characteristic of all the good artists that I know. It doesn't mean that you can't make something good if you're not obsessed, but I don't think you'll make a lot of good things unless you're obsessed.
After decades of being on the front line of music, Brian Eno is now at the forefront of how music and art are playing a crucial role in the fight against climate breakdown and biodiversity loss. At 75, his passion remains undiminished.
You have to be obsessed to the point of being prepared to fail quite often and not give up and just think, okay, well, that's just compost. You know, all that failure is sort of compost for the thing I'm going to grow one day.
I'm Antonia Bolingbroke-Kent, and you've been listening to the documentary, a 2 Degrees West production from the BBC World Service. It was produced by Louise Orchard. Original music by Rowan Bishop.